Did you know we have completely ad-free early access to all of our episodes? Well, we do. Not only that, but we have dozens of bonus episodes waiting for you. Head on over to patreon.com/ghosttownpod, and you can check it out for 7 days absolutely free. That's patreon.com/ghosttownpod.
Royalty Gone Wild.
I'm Jason Horton.
I'm Rebecca Lieb.
And this is Ghost Town.
Though most people know who Princess Margaret is, maybe through history, the Netflix show The Crown, or her very famous sister, the Queen of England, not many people know just how subversive, how outrageous, and how, well, fascinating Princess Margaret, Countess of Snowdon, actually was. As some say, you're only as interesting as the people you associate with. Though she was third in line to the throne, Margaret's friends were what amplified the princess as a point of controversy and fascination. They were the real British royalty, at least according to the English social scene in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, and created such a stir that they were given their own name. According to Vogue writer Hamish Bowles, Margaret was, quote, a chain-smoking, chain-drinking, man-eating monster with flashes of wit and unsteady charm. And her friends? Well, they were socialites who took Margaret's reputation to a whole new level. Commoners in the Rat Pack, Brat Pack, Pussy Posse, and the Bundy Drive Boys, take a seat. Because today on Ghost Town, we're talking about the Margaret Set. Margaret was born on August 21st, 1930, the younger daughter of Prince Albert, Duke of York, later known as King George VI, and Elizabeth, Duchess of York, later Queen Elizabeth, the Queen Mother. She was affectionately known within the family as Margot, and developed her skills at singing and playing the piano as a girl, getting, along with her older sister Elizabeth, a limited education, only enough to make them into well-mannered young ladies. In December 1936, Margaret's uncle and king at the time, Edward VIII, abdicated the throne to marry Wallis Simpson, a twice-divorced American woman, whom neither the Church of England nor the government would accept as queen. It was then that Elizabeth and Margaret's father, George VI, became king. George loved his daughters, underlining the fact that they were intrinsically different. He described Elizabeth as his pride, Margaret as his joy. As the two young women grew up, Elizabeth began her education as the heir apparent, while Margaret, well, she didn't really know what was next for her incredibly privileged, sheltered life. But one thing she held fast to was that she was, in fact, her father's joy, well-liked, funny, and great in social settings. The princess could, quote, charm the pearl out of an oyster, her father would say. After Elizabeth married, Princess Margaret became one of the most eligible single women in the world, and the tabloids, of course, loved it. As her sister learned the royal ropes, in 1947, the 17-year-old Margaret began a friendship with war hero and her father's equerry, Captain Peter Townsend, who was 12 years her senior. In 1952, when George VI passed away, Elizabeth ascended to the throne. It was at that point that Margaret, then 22, and Townsend, then 38, decided to ask for Elizabeth's permission for them to marry. After a very long back and forth, which could be its own episode in and of itself, Elizabeth, in essence, said that unless Margaret wanted to be stripped of her titles and privileges and royal stipend, that the answer was no. The reason? Townsend was a commoner, divorced himself, and the scandal surrounding Edward VIII's abdication to marry Simpson was in the public's not-so-distant memory. This personal tragedy for Margaret might have been the start of the rebellious streak that would characterize her as the black sheep of the royal family. Quote, I would like it to be known that I have decided not to marry Group Captain Peter Townsend, Princess Margaret announced in a statement around that time. Mindful of the Church's teaching that Christian marriage is indissoluble, and conscious of my duty to the Commonwealth, I have resolved to put these considerations before any others. Perhaps if the couple had married, the princess would have settled down into a more conventional life like her sister, and this episode wouldn't have been made at all. But in his 1978 autobiography, Time and Chance, Townsend wrote, quote, "I simply hadn't the weight, I knew it, to counterbalance all she would have lost." Single for the first time as an adult woman, Margaret threw herself into full-scale socialite life. Papers at the time described her as nonplussed by her royal day-to-day, the culture that had blocked her potential marriage. To Margaret, it all felt obsolete, old, irrelevant. Quote, "She is restless, spasmodic, though often intense in her interests, easily bored," wrote the New Statesman. "She devours magazines, modish books, delights in fashionable West End musical comedies, good jazz, and the latest semi-intellectual cultural interests from America. There is a certain brittle superficiality about her mind, an inability to concentrate for long, which sometimes disturbs her elders." Not the most complimentary description of Margaret. But this day of cultural fascination, this wandering eye, this want to indulge, all began with Margaret's royal morning routine, one of my favorite details of Margaret's life. So, Margaret's day began with breakfast in bed at 9 a.m., quote, "followed by 2 hours in bed listening to the radio, reading the newspapers, which she invariably left scattered all over the floor, and chain smoking," wrote Craig Brown in his book, Ma'am Darling. Then at 12:30, it was time for a vodka pick-me-up. After that, it was a four-course lunch. And after that, the princess's night began, and she went out carousing around London with friends, including debutantes, earls, ladies, and even princes. But that's not all. She had many famous people in and around orbiting her set, including Christian Dior, actor and comedian Danny Kaye, Peter Sellers, Gore Vidal, John Fowles, Elizabeth Taylor, and Richard Burton, and Eddie Fisher, who had a brief affair with the princess in 1953. The newspapers called them the Margaret Set, and they were the it crowd. Rumors swirled as vibrantly as their RSVPs to parties and events. The public hypothesized who was dating who Margaret was flirting with the night before, and who was getting closer and closer to the buzzy princess. Margaret loved the hype, but more than that, she loved her friends, she loved the adoration, she loved drinking, and she loved having fun. It was all pretty easy in the cultural hotbed that was London at the dawn of the swinging 60s. Louis Armstrong, whose music Margaret loved, referred to her as, quote, "one hip chick," and John Lennon playfully nicknamed Margaret Princess Margarine. According to Ralph Ellison, another of the friends that Margaret collected, she was, quote, "a little hot-looking pretty girl. The more she was seen and photographed, the more powerful men seemed to become infatuated with the 20-something, trying themselves to infiltrate the Margaret set. It said Picasso desperately wanted to marry Margaret, but Margaret at the time was more into drinking, smoking, and making conversation. Elise Taylor of Vogue reported that the princess loved to smoke and drink so much that she, quote, "tried to combine the smoking and drinking by gluing matchboxes onto tumblers so she could strike matches while drinking." Very notably, Margaret once said, quote, "disobedience is my joy." But it was more than that. It was who she was. But as quickly as Princess Margaret would charm and collect those in her set, she'd turn on them too. We'll keep the party going after this break. In May 1960, Margaret actually did get married to a bohemian, anti-establishment, and sexually fluid photographer named Anthony Armstrong Jones. At the time of their wedding, Armstrong Jones had gotten a married friend pregnant, and the royal family was concerned. They had right to be. Margaret and Armstrong Jones's marriage was chaotic from the start, known throughout London and among her set to be fraught with ego, petulance, mood swings, heavy spending, fighting, and, of course, philandering. Quote, "the princess's party trick seems to have been to lull people into a false sense of security and camaraderie," writes Hamish Bowles, "and then demolish them with regal, rank-pulling put-downs that are masterpieces of their art." Charles Hussey, a British journalist, wrote in the New York Times Magazine back in 1965 that Margaret's moods went from, quote, "a gaiety that was sometimes febrile," to, quote, "Hanoverian gloom." And Margaret knew it too, both loving and hating the destiny that was her royal existence and taking it out on the people around her. Her, quote, "unique disobedience continued into her married life. Her wedding was an extravagant affair that cost the British government over £25,000, around nearly $1 million today. And her six-week honeymoon on the royal yacht Britannia cost even more than the wedding, around £40,000. And it wasn't just money. Princess Margaret insisted that she be addressed as ma'am, except for her closest friends, who were permitted to call her ma'am darling. She signed her checks as Margaret. No title, no last name, just Margaret. As a house guest and friend, she was notoriously demanding. Despite being a rebellious black sheep, she wanted everyone around her to use the royal protocol, no exceptions. And her wit, well, it was great and charming and engaging, but often it was cruel. One of the more famous exchanges showcasing Princess Margaret's ire is when she met Twiggy at a dinner party. "Who are you?" she asked. The supermodel responded, "I'm Leslie Hornby, ma'am, but people call me Twiggy." Princess Margaret then responded, "How unfortunate." By the mid-1960s, Margaret and her husband had all-out affairs with other people. The set kept many of Margaret's trysts under wraps, though rumors did come out that Margaret liked younger men, some of them quite famous, including, but not limited to, Mick Jagger. A story about the two of them goes that Princess Margaret, wearing a revealing gown, beckoned Jagger over at a party they were both at, leaving behind his indignant girlfriend, Chrissy Shrimpton, on the other side of the room. Quote, "There was a flirtation going on there, definitely," said Lady Elsa Boker, whose husband, Sir James Boker, was Britain's former ambassador to Austria and Burma. Princess Margaret was only in her 30s and quite attractive, and as everybody knows, she was attracted to younger men. After that fateful dinner party, according to one courtier, quote, "they spoke on the phone constantly and she invited him to social events." The courtier then recalled, quote, "she found him sexy and exciting. If you saw them laughing together, dancing, the way she'd put her hand on his knee and giggle at his stories like a schoolgirl, you'd have thought there was something going on." Margaret's sister, Queen Elizabeth, however, was not amused by this dalliance with a younger man. Quote, "the Queen could tolerate the Beatles because they were clean-cut and sort of sweet, at least that was their reputation at the time," said Harold Brooks Baker, publisher of Burke's Peerage. "The Stones were an entirely different matter." Were they lovers? Nobody in the set would say a word. As their relationship became more and more strained, Margaret and Armstrong Jones spent less and less time together. Princess Margaret was linked romantically with other people, including Anthony Barton, a friend of her husband's, and then she had a full-blown relationship with Robin Douglas Home, an aristocrat and former army officer who was the nephew of a former prime minister and, at night, played the piano in clubs. And moonlit as a piano player in local nightclubs. In February 1967, when the British press began reporting that the royal couple were about to break up, Princess Margaret spent more and more time with her elite friend group, being photographed often with her close friend Peter Sellers and spending more time out of Europe, on the Caribbean island of Mustique. In September 1973, at a luncheon in Edinburgh, she met the 25-year-old Roderick Llewellyn, who soon became a person of interest for Margaret. The son of minor nobility, Mr. Llewellyn had worked briefly at a mine in southern Africa and as an apprentice brewer in England. Their relationship soon became an open secret in the Margaret set and other close circles. Until February 1976, when the paparazzi snapped a picture of the couple in the Caribbean. Scandal erupted, and in June, the royal family announced that Princess Margaret and Armstrong Jones were separating. It was an action that ended a 400-year-old taboo on divorce in the royal family. Meanwhile, the relationship between the princess and Llewellyn set off Parliament in a different way. Critics demanded that her royal allowance, then more than $100,000 a year, that's nearly $600,000 in today's dollars, be cut, because the princess didn't seem to be, quote, fulfilling her duties. Thankfully for Margaret, nothing became of that, and she continued to live out her lavish royal life. Armstrong Jones quickly remarried in 1977, while Princess Margaret opted for a more private life, as her health was declining. Quote, I have no intention of telling people what I had for breakfast, she once said, though, of course, we have an idea. Princess Margaret lived the rest of her life out of the public eye, until on February 9, 2002, she died peacefully in her sleep at the age of 71 from complications following several strokes. Quote, to many people, Princess Margaret was the black sheep of her generation of royals. But that reputation did not necessarily trouble her, reads Princess Margaret's obituary in the New York Times. It's true, the princess was a complicated person, full of dichotomies, a rebel but also intrinsically a product of her time, and the many people around her, who supported her, feuded with her, protected her, and guarded her secrets, from the public, the royal family, and maybe even Margaret herself.